follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Miller, Brian Hanley, hanging out with you for another hour here on ESPN 1000 and, of course, the ESPN Chicago app. You can always also listen to us on 100.3 HD2 or, of course, watch us live on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago, brought to you by Blue Chew. Bri, it is official. The Bulls have signed Torrey Craig. We knew that was going to happen, but with the NBA's legal tampering period before things can be made official, I guess now, Sunday, July 16th, the Bulls officially announced that Torrey Craig has been signed. So
I'm getting my season ticket money in.
All right. You better hurry.
Yeah, I was just making sure because, you might have a hiccup here, but now I can go ahead and commit to 41 games or whatever that's going to look like.
There you go. All right, so as we were heading to break, I mentioned to turn our attention to the bear hair. But I don't mean the Chicago Bears, Bri. I mean the bear. The FX show available to stream on Hulu, which I think anybody who has sampled it, they've probably gone about it and are either currently watching season two or maybe getting into it. It's a great show. It's actually... The show is based in Chicago. At least the restaurant that everything is centered around is based on a fictional restaurant that essentially is it's based on Mr. Beef.
Yeah.
But so it's loosely based on that, and it is a show that I think anybody who, if you've checked it out, it's cool to see the Chicago scenery if you have any type of intimate relationship with the city. That in itself, I think, makes it worth a watch. And then if you factor in just the fact that it is really well acted and it's a great, I think personally, a great storyline and does a lot about,
a lot of layers to it.
Absolutely.
And great writing and the references to everything Chicago, from restaurants to, I mean, the fact that Italian beef sandwiches last year, when the bear became the hit that it is, mm-hmm. From New York to L.A. and every city in between the coasts, Italian beef sandwiches that were on the menu in some Italian restaurants, say, in New York, and they might have sold 10 a day, if that.
Yes.
Now they're selling 200. They couldn't, keep all the fixings in stock. Didn't know how to even predict how many they're going to sell because everyone wanted to try the
Italian beef, sure.
That we grew up on, and God bless, Carm knows Johnny's Beef is my favorite spot on North Avenue growing up.
And when you say Carm, you mean Carmen DeFalco, right? Not Carm,
yeah, absolutely.
Not Carm in the show, Carmy.
No. Carm who touts everything that's good about the stretch on North Avenue and Elmwood Park.
Yes.
And rightfully so. But, I mean, that was a bicycle ride from my house and even driving past it to go out, visit family. I just glance over and there's always a line out the door at Johnny's Beef. No matter what time of day it is. And, hey, what you got? You want that dipped?
Yes.
Juicy? Okay, you got that dipped. You want sweet? You want hot? It's they're everywhere in the city, rightfully so. And the rest of the country is just becoming aware of it because of the bear.
Yeah, I mean, talk about just completely being oblivious to the fact that, just living in the city for my entire life for the most part, just having no idea that folks were unaware of what Italian beefs actually were, just because, like you said, it's just a staple of the city. But I digress. So the bear basically has been the hit show, one of the newer hit shows on FX, and it also, for some folks who may not be familiar with it, it is what the Bears based their schedule release video on, which has become all the rave across football. When teams release their, their schedules on the NFL schedule release date, teams oftentimes will make a video in conjunction with it now because it just goes viral and social media, it's a way to get and interact with your fans. And the Chicago Bears based their schedule release on The Bear, the series, and where you saw lots of appearances made by Justin Fields and plenty of other current members of the team. So I digress, though. I enjoyed this season. Now, you're still currently going through the season, right, Bri? You're not finished?
I'm still catching up, yeah.
Which,
yeah,
and And I don't think you will be disappointed when you do, assuming you do complete it. I think you'll be.
I'm going to complete it. And between you, you know, asking where I'm at mm-hmm. and neighbors and friends, and everyone's like, oh, I won't tell you any more about it.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm still trying to wrap up series from last year that, you know, I'm pretty much toward the end. And before I, you know, I'm just trying to maximize my efficiently trying to wrap up series before I get too deep into the other ones. I love what I've seen of the bear, obviously.
Yeah. You know what? I do have a little chunk here that I want to play, which I think Chicago fans will. It's going to drum up, I think, a real debate here, but we're up against it. So I'm going to hold it off for one moment here. We'll take a quick timeout. And when we come back, the bear, the FX series, drubs up a 20-year-old debate. Do we finally have a final verdict? I'll let Brian hear it, and I'll let him decide whether he agrees with it or not. The Bear, coming up next.
Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Hanging out with you till 11 o'clock. Jesse Rogers jumps on about 15 minutes from now. We'll pick his brain on the Major League Baseball trade deadline and what the Chicago Cubs and White Sox should be expecting in return for some of their key assets, assuming, of course, that both do the prudent thing and become sellers at the trade deadline. But as we were heading to break, Bri, I was talking about the bear. And this is, don't worry, no spoilers here, folks. This is for anybody who is from Chicago. This is absolutely not going to spoil the show in any way for you. Don't worry about it. I have about a two-minute clip here from season two. And again, don't worry, it's nothing that will spoil anything from the series. I promise you that. So if you're in the midst of watching it like Bri, I am not going to spoil any of the plot for you. But this is a scene between Oliver Platt, who plays the role of Uncle Jimmy in the FX series, The Bear. And I think most people, he's a definite that guy, Oliver Platt. He's been in plenty of films throughout his career.
If you don't know his name, you see that face and that body and like that guy.
Absolutely.
And he always turns in great performances. And, you know, he was one of the 13 Emmy nominations for the show. So that guy is still doing it at a high level.
Yes. And so that guy, Oliver Platt, does most of the speaking here to his nephew, Carmi, who is played by Jeremy Allen White. Carmi Burzatto. And this is a little pep talk that Uncle Jimmy is giving to Carm.
May I share with you a story of complete and utter failure?
Yes, I've been waiting.
Wonderful. Do you remember Alex Gonzalez, shortstop for the Cubs?
No, I don't think so.
Right, and it's a shame you don't think so, but I'm going to explain why you don't think so. He's a good player, solid player, moved around a lot. Cubs had him like 2 years. One of those years, they're playing the Marlins, right? Cubbies up 3-1, top of the eighth, game six, National League Championship series, okay? They win. They go to the World Series, which at this point they hadn't been in, like, I don't know, 45 years, okay? Run first, run second. There's one out. Miguel Cabrera hits a choppy little thing to Gonzalez, right? And I mean an easy grab, no f***ing brainer kind of thing, but for whatever reason, Gonzalez is like, oh, maybe I'll catch it with my hand. And then, oh, maybe I'll catch it with my glove. And then, oh, maybe I'll catch it with both. He bobbled the ball, didn't make the double play, couldn't send the Cubs the ninth. Unforced error, right? The result of that, bases are loaded. And the result of that, well, hell breaks loose. Error after error after error. Oh, man. The Cubs fall apart at the seams. Marlins score 5 runs. Cubs lose.
So why don't we remember him?
Because that very same inning, several plays earlier, Luis Castillo hits a foul ball with left outfield, right? And, oh, my God, it looks like, it feels like, it smells like Moises Alou going to grab that f***ing thing and the Cubs going to be 4 outs from the pennant. But instead, just as Moises is jumping for the ball, a fan in the stands, inches from Moises, does what any goddamn person would do with a goddamn ball flying towards him in a major league sporting venue. He tries to catch it, but his glove bumps into Moises' glove. The ball drops and end of play. You Cubbies.
Bartman.
Bartman.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to kill little Stevie Bartman. But Alex Gonzalez is f***ed up. Trust me, it's the real f***ed up, right? Let the eight other f***ups. But then all of a sudden, all those f***ups are awash because of Stephen Bartman. Because everybody and their mother wants to blame this f***ing guy instead of the actual f***ing mother f***ing f***ups who f***ed it up. Just a normal guy, right? You know, with normal f***ing headphones, is reaching for a foul ball on a lovely night at Wrigley. And he ends up taking the blame for an entire squad who literally took their eye off the ball.
Okay, so we don't want to be Bartman, right?
No, dumbass. You want to be Gonzalez. You don't want to be unfocused.
All right, Bry. So I loved it. As I was watching that unfold, I was amused because do we finally have the definitive telling of the Bartman story and ultimately the blame being thrust on Alex Gonzalez and the entire 2003 Cubs team? Has Oliver Platt finally rendered the Bartman story over?
God bless the writers. Mm-hmm. God bless Oliver Platt. For years, immediately following the quote-unquote Bartman game.
Yep.
And during that game, you had the likes of John Cass, the then columnist yes. of the Tribune, descending upon said Bartman section, trying to get him to talk in the immediate aftermath.
Bry, we had Wayne Dres working here, you know, yeah. staking out, Bartman.
And security had to hustle him out for his own safety. I mean, Alex bleepin' Gonzalez makes a bleepin', just cleanly fields a yes. double play ball, and none of it. I mean, people can boo. They would have booed because and that's exactly what happened. I mean, it's Leon Durham in 1984.
Yep.
You can control what you can control, and you could have been out of that inning. You could have been out of that game. You could have been in the World Series. And Alex bleepin' Gonzalez, good player, solid player, moved around a lot. That
don't remember.
I always said, just go ahead and make the plays you had to make, and it's all an asterisk, a footnote, and everyone say, hey, remember that? That could have been ugly. Well, it was ugly because you didn't make the play.
Yes, and certainly it's I think a lot more palatable because 13 years later, when they finally do end the curse in 2016, people can finally, in some ways, get past the whole Bartman play. But I was thoroughly amused, and it led me to thinking so. You know, this is such a, you know, it's a 2.5 minute chunk in the middle of a series that a lot of folks, you know, a prestige series that a lot of folks really are enamored with. And it's based in Chicago. So I loved it. And from obviously our purposes, talking sports every day and, and no doubt, Bartman, we've spent a large portion, you know, a significant portion of our careers discussing that particular play and instance. I loved that it is dredged up in the Bear almost 20 years later, just shy of it.
Last year they did a rant about the Blackhawks, I believe, celebrating Denny Savard's Hall of Fame induction, which I covered up in Toronto, and that was a fun night.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some things you would have to really be a Chicago sports yes. fan to understand. But, they referenced Chris Chelios, and, I mean, they incorporate all that. Look, this series had me in the opening segment of the first episode of the first series or the first season last year, mm-hmm. when our own beloved late great Lynn Bramer was the scene.
Yeah,
yeah, setting the scene as if he was on the radio. Yep. And God bless, they're going to celebrate Lynn at the Metro on August 19th. First celebration of his life on his what would be his 69th birthday. But that anyone who grew up in Chicago knows Lynn Bramer,
yes.
right? I mean, and generations have listened to Lynn. And so it's become a nationwide hit, but still in Chicago.
Yes.
You have to be a Chicagoan to appreciate
absolutely
so many different elements to the show. And Jeremy Allen White, if people don't know, I mean, Shameless.
Yes. He only plays Chicago characters, apparently.
And he said, I mean, he lives in New York.
Yes.
He's like, basically, Chicago is my adopted hometown. And I mean, my career is Chicago, and Chicago is my career. I mean, he has found work here, and he has been stellar in both series.
Yeah. And, you know, I haven't actually sat down to really put together the best Chicago-based TV series of all time, but The Bear is quickly ascending up the list of all-time great series for me. And so anybody who, I think any Chicagoan will love The Bear. If you haven't started watching it, check it out. It is definitely great TV right now. And I'll also add, I was thinking about this. It's so intricately woven into the episode. They use the Steve Bartman, story there. I was trying to think, like what other famous moments in sports history are like woven in so well into whether it be TV or film, right? Like that's a large chunk of the show. It's like in a 25-minute show usually per episode, right? You're talking roughly 10% of that show, that episode was, they devoted to the Steve Bartman story, the telling of that.
And I love that, Carm, Jeremy Allen White says, so you don't want to be Bartman. No!
Exactly.
Don't want to be Gonzalez.
Keep your eye on the prize.
Yeah.
I was trying, the only thing that came to mind was, because I'm not talking about a famous sports moment that, was made into a movie, like The Miracle, right? Obviously, Miracle, The Miracle on Ice, Miracle was obviously its own, the whole movie is based on the actual events of the 1980 U.S. Olympic team upsetting Russia and then eventually, I'm sorry, the Soviet Union, and then eventually going on and winning gold in the 1980 Olympics. Good Will Hunting came to mind, right? Fisk, his famous home run in game six, right? Where Robin Williams tells the story to a young Matt Damon and tells him all about how, the game six, he had tickets to the game and how he didn't end up going because he went to go see about a girl. That was the only other one that came to mind where it's wow, they really took that whole thing. They devote a lot of time to it. And then it's part of whether it be the piece of art, whether it's the film or the TV series. I was really fascinated to see The Bear, devote so much time to that, to the Bartman play. And then to think about it, we're coming up on 20 years this October when, the 20-year anniversary of the Steve Bartman play.
Yeah. And speaking of Miracle, and, that was basically you're fighting a Cold War. And so you're not fighting an actual war, but you're trying to show supremacy over the Soviet Union, and you're doing it through basically what is a Soviet Union professional team, in the guise of an Olympic team.
Yes.
Before everyone, pros are at every level in the Olympics. But back then it was the amateur pickup team for the United States upsetting the huge favorite.
The all-star team that composed the Soviet Union.
And Vladdy Tretiak was the when I was covering the Hawks in the Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
He was the goaltender coach for the Blackhawks, and he was on the Soviet team. He was chased from the net, right? In that
correct?
Game,
yeah, first period, right?
Yeah, and Vladdy was—he was a gentleman. I always enjoyed being around him, but it's just like wow. I mean, from sitting there in college watching that unfold, and then that was the semifinal game, right? I mean, mm-hmm. but that was
correct.
We're all sitting there holding our breath to see how it all unfolded. So it sometimes they can incorporate sports, but like you said, Miracle was just larger than life and was going to, and they did a terrific job with it. I mean, obviously who's the kid who did the video went viral. He did a imitation.
The speech, the Herb Brooks speech, right?
Yeah. He's dressed in his little suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That speech and that group and that moment was huge.
A Disney classic, Miracle, also worth a watch if you've never seen it. And of course, the U.S. had to go on and defeat Finland to actually secure the gold medal.
Yep.
It wasn't actually beating the USSR that won them the gold. They had to go ahead and beat Finland as well. Do you agree with the premise that it was that Bartman did what any fan would do, or what was your position back then, Bri? Or does a fan need to know better?
I always contended that he didn't actually outstretch his arms into the field of play.
Ooh. Yes.
I mean,
he was
Moises Alou, if Moises Alou doesn't throw his hands up,
correct,
in exhaustion or can't believe what just happened.
Yeah.
If he doesn't give you that body language.
Yes, completely.
Does that
agree.
Even become a thing?
Yeah. The complete meltdown by Alou definitely aided in the vilifying of Steve Bartman. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. Up next, we talk with Jesse Rogers as the Major League Baseball trade deadline approaches.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
By our buddy Darren on Twitter, he said that Silver Linings Playbook incorporating the Eagles and Deshaun Jackson at the 10 when he just drops the ball before heading into the end zone famously. That's a good one. That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, that's Good Will Hunting. And, of course, the Bears' use of the Bartman play, talking a little about that. But now it's an opportunity to bring in our ESPN MLB insider. He covers baseball for ESPN. Jesse Rogers does a fine job covering all of baseball, but also, of course, the Cubs and White Sox, which is why we want to bring him on today as the Major League Baseball trade deadline approaches. Fresh off of a red-eye flight, Jesse Rogers joins us nice and peppy. What's going on, Jess?
I'm good, guys. Good morning. What's happening?
Not much, man. Thanks for waking up early. We appreciate it, bud. All right, so as the trade deadline approaches here, it feels like, well, get to the White Sox, but the Cubs are the one that have at least I think a little bit more of an interesting decision to make. Are they really going to kind of wait the next 14 or 15 games to determine what their plan will be as the trade deadline approaches here? Or are Cody Bellinger and Marcus Stroman just too good of an asset to let walk out the door for nothing?
No, I think they're waiting. I think there's a few teams waiting and they're one of them all the way up until the end. If they can, if it becomes, you know, really clear this week, that'll change things, right? It won't ever become really clear the other way, meaning, unless they just win every game left in July. Like, even as they get closer to 500, let's say this month, I still think Jets got to make some hard decisions. But it could go easy on them the other way if they just start losing a bunch of games here at home. They're 1-1 so far since the break. So, yeah, I under whatever normal circumstances you want to call it, they're going to wait as long as they possibly can. There's nothing wrong with that. Most teams do anyway. Other teams get a little desperate. You can extract the most out of them if you do end up trading. And if you somehow add, you wait as long as you can to know exactly what you need as well. Although I said last week they should have added a left-handed reliever during the break. Give David Ross the best chance in that bullpen you can give them, even in a all-star break type trade. They didn't necessarily do that. So we'll see. We'll see. But more likely than not, they're probably going to sell, right? I think they want to. I think he wants every reason not to. But they've got to get back to 500. They've got to get back to a little bit closer to the other two teams in front of them. Just give Jed a real sign, a real sign. And I think he'd stand pat or maybe add that reliever. I don't think he's going to add a ton, but at the very least, maybe stand pat. But he has to be given a legitimate, realistic reason to do it. And if the standings are the same as they are now on July 30th, different story. I think he's selling.
Well, Jess, if they are waiting and legitimately, I mean, Fangraphs has the Cubs of basically just about 10% chance to make the playoffs. Marcus Stroman is not shy about sharing his thoughts on anything. Certainly on his contract, he addressed it again yesterday and says he doesn't see an extension coming in season. Jed didn't really, I mean, he basically said, well, the player can talk about it, but we're not going to. As a Cubs fan, as Cub fans out there, how should you read that, not only in terms of this season, but obviously Marcus can opt out. And yesterday he said something, as much as he loves it here, he said he's always very good outside of here too. I think he just means he's happy in life, but the love he professes sincerely for the Cubs and the Cub fans, it just seems like he's all about business and he understands he could be happy in another location, another uniform too.
And you also referenced the idea of possibly coming back in free agency. Other guys have done that before. Look, nobody was happier as a Cub than Anthony Rizzo ever, right? This was right. Mr. Cub of this generation, and he moved on. It's just what happens. Why they aren't extending him offers now. Look, Cody Bellinger's not complaining that he's not getting an offer now. You know, there's all sorts of reasons behind it, right? We don't know exactly each of them, other than one is keeping your options open for a losing team. Like, you know, the Rockies signed Daniel Bard mid-year last year, and everybody was scratching their head. Like, when you are losing and it's not really the game plan of that season, you don't just start handing out money. I mean, that's what's going through their mind. Like, okay, we've got to rethink these things. Most teams don't start handing out contracts in losing years. Now, maybe at the end of the year, maybe before he opt out, that's a different story. So I don't find any of this that unusual. Player professes he wants to stay, and the team's not ready to make him stay. Or maybe they don't want him. Maybe they don't want to offer him a big contract. Maybe they don't want to start going down that road of disrespect mid-year, right? And maybe they don't want him because they project him in the future as someone that's not going to age well. Like, there's a lot of reasons. Why didn't the Cubs want Wilson Contreras, right, at his number? Why didn't they want Rizzo at his number? So there's all sorts of reasons that go behind it. But the main reason is our season's not going the right way. We're going to keep our options open as it comes to a close. And as July comes to a close, we're going to keep our options open so we can at least improve on one end. We're not going to improve in the standings, but we can improve in the farm, for example. So that's some of the reasons why he's not getting a deal right now.
Jesse Rogers joining us on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline here on ESPN 1000. Miller and Hanley with you till 11 o'clock. I think that's probably, if you read between the lines, Jess, you know, you look at Stroman in particular, Stroman loves it here. Maybe he loves it here because Jed's put a great defense up the middle in front of him. And as a non-traditional power pitcher who doesn't strike out as many as some aces across the league, maybe Stroman recognizes this is the best place for him to continue pitching. And Jed recognizes that, you know what, while we love the production you've had, we don't necessarily think you're worth the money that you're probably going to command on the free agent market once you hit it.
All that is possible. Or maybe he's got a team that loves Marcus Stroman, and he can get their top prospect, and he can't get a top prospect from anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you keep your options open. Maybe they will end up keeping him. They ended up keeping him, Wilson Contreras, and he walked for a draft pick.
That would be a disaster, though, wouldn't it?
Well, probably, yes. I'm all for, like, my saying is, if you're going to lose in the standings, win something over the summer, and that something would be the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like, don't make it a lost summer. Cody Bellinger, in my mind, is actually even more interesting and more important, to be honest. Not that starting pitchers are a dime a dozen, but he's a right-handed starter in his 30s. Like, all right, once you trade him, you got to replace him. But Cody Bellinger is a left-handed slugger who has found his game and is so valuable, so valuable. I mean, Brian Cashman should back up the prospect truck for Cody Bellinger if it comes to it at the end of this month. The Yankees have been on a four-year search for left-handed hitting. They've gone through Matt Carpenter. They've gone through Joey Gallo. They've given Anthony Rizzo multiple contracts because they know how valuable it is. Left-handed power hitting is so valuable. Look at the Cubs. They've been trying to replace Rizzo and Schwarber, and they have with one guy. You actually need two good lefty hitters in your lineup. I mean, two sluggers. Look at most great teams. Jordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper. Cubs replace, and once they trade Bellinger, they're going to have to replace him, but at least get a haul for him. And I can guarantee you this, he's not signing before the deadline. He's also not signing before free agency. So there's no mystery with Bellinger.
Yeah.
It's not going to be up to the team. Bellinger is going to go to free agency no matter what. So to me, he's the guy you most likely have to move. Unfortunately, he's also got such great value for your own team, but you may not have it past September. So what's the point? So again, it's a tough call, but you have to do it if the standings dictate it.
All right. So the Cubs are legitimately waiting. Why would the Sox be waiting? And the reports are the Reds have checked in, the Dodgers have checked in. Obviously, with just over 2 weeks to go, Lucas Giolito, I don't know what he could do in another start or two to improve his stock appreciably. He is who he is, and maybe is short of Shohei Ohtani being on the market. He's the best pitcher available. Rick Hahn, what are you waiting? I mean, what are they waiting for? And two, I see, Sox fans on Twitter expecting two players off the roster and three top prospects. What's legitimate in terms of return for Lucas Giolito purely as a rental, and you don't expand the deal by throwing in Ronaldo Lopez for the Dodgers or whomever?
Right. So, first of all, it takes two to tango, Brian. I mean, the other team has to say something that Rick Hahn likes. Now, they're more likely to say it the closer to the deadline. It's just the same old story. Like, teams wait as long as they can before giving up assets. Let's say the Yankees trade for him and their starting shortstop goes down. And now you've given up your assets for a pitcher when you are desperate for a shortstop. Like, you wait as long as you can for that reason, to make sure the position that you're trading for is the one you need, because you only have so many assets to give up. But look, that doesn't mean it can't happen today. I'm just saying most of the time they wait it out. Because I don't think one extra start out of Giolito is going to make the difference for teams. Like, they're going to wait. It's a couple more, and they're going to see what he looks like, and then make the call on the prospect call they give up. So waiting is just about it takes two to tango, and it hasn't happened yet. He gets you back a couple prospects. Now, what does he get you back? Is it a top 10 and a top 20? Yeah, something like that. I mean, it all depends.
And you mean within that organization's top 10 and top 20?
Yes,
No, that's okay. I just want to clarify for the listeners out there.
Yeah. Within your organization, it just goes by, it's almost like a math equation. If you're going to get three, well, they're probably all going to be between 10 and 20. If you're going to get two, you're going to get a top 10 and a top 15. If it's going to be one, you might get a top five. Now, you don't get a one, two, or three because he's a free agent in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about a one, two, or three prospect from another organization. So it's like maybe a 7 and a 12, maybe a 9, a 13, and an 18. That's kind of what you get for a starting pitcher, one of the better ones on the market. Is it quality over quantity or quantity over quality? But think something like that. There are exceptions to every rule. Ohtani would get a huge haul, obviously, because he's two players,
yes,
even though it's only for 2 months. But a pitcher like Giolito, he's kind of one below the elite, free agent 2 months. It's a couple prospects, a couple decent ones, but they're not the number one from another franchise. They're not a can't-miss prospect necessarily, but it should be a good one. It should be a good one, at least one from another team, if not two.
Jess, as we let you go here, do you think Shohei Ohtani will ultimately be dealt by the Angels at the deadline?
I'm going to say yes. The way the standings are going for them, despite this late win they had last night, it's a free fall for the Angels. They're without Trout. They're going to wait till the last minute. I'm going to say yes. Now, I'll say a caveat here, because there is a chance he re-signs with them. They're in the mix. There is a chance. And the one thing, if you think you have that player who's been on your team this long, you could always say, oh, we'll trade him and re-sign him. You know, we were talking about that with the Cubs. But once you open the door for him to be in another organization, for him to have to move his family, all right, like, once you open that door, John Lester talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
Once he left the Red Sox, he was much less likely to re-sign with them, because he already even traveled across the country to Oakland. He understood what another team was all about. Like, it opened his mind to free agency. And you certainly might be doing that to Ohtani if he leaves. But the bottom line is, he's going to go through that free agency process no matter what. So even if you kept him and you thought you had a good chance of re-signing him, it's not like he's going to re-sign on, you know, October 15th. He's going to re-sign after talking to a bunch of other teams. So I think you roll the dice and you make the trade and you overhaul your prospect base, and then you make your pitch in the offseason. And, of course, you go to them. You go to them this month and say, hey, we still love you. We're going to make you a huge offer come November 1st, but this is what we're getting for you now. We got to do the deal. But they will wait until the last minute, probably to sell every possible ticket at home before they make that move and take the PR hit that they do.
Good stuff, Jess. Thanks for hopping on, man. We appreciate you waking up a little bit early for us.
You got it, guys. Be well. Talk to you later, Brian.
Thanks, Jess.
Jesse Rogers joining us here on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline on ESPN 1000. All right, Bri, a couple of numbers in focus when we come back next.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
All right, I got a few numbers for the folks as we wrap things up here on ESPN 1000, Brian. White Sox pregame coverage against the Braves starts at noon today. Of course, first pitch coming your way right around 12:30. All right, so one first number I got for you, Bri. Novak Djokovic currently in pursuit of trying to extend his Grand Slam men's singles title from 23 to 24. He currently trails Carlos Alcaraz in the third set here. So we shall see. They're one set apiece, and Alcaraz is up three games to one in the third. I'm sorry, three matches to one here in the third set. So we'll see if Djokovic can go ahead and extend his record for majors in Wimbledon. You a big tennis guy, Bri, or no?
No, I mean, played it growing up because it was kind of a hot thing in the 70s, park district programs and stuff like that.
It was the pickleball before its time.
Exactly. Well done, yeah. But beyond that, I'm not a Breakfast of Wimbledon guy. But
okay.
That's pretty impressive, 23 going
I would say so. Actually, honestly, really, Wimbledon, I'm only a tennis majors guy, and usually not until we get until the quarters and semifinals as well. So I'm not a big tennis guy, but when the majors are here, I will check in and usually watch what's going on. So that match is currently underway at Wimbledon, the final there. Another number, LeBron James switching from number six, his jersey number six, to 23 for the Lakers next season. Said that he wanted to honor Bill Russell for one final season. That's why he kept it last year. But now that the NBA has officially retired number six across the league, he is going to hang it up as well, and he will go back to the old number that he donned for the Cleveland Cavaliers for so many years. His first time as a member of the Lakers, he'll wear number 23.
Well, Bill Russell, LeBron stands on shoulders of greats, and Bill Russell is certainly that.
Yes, no doubt about it. And then finally, another story that caught my eye. Tyreek Hill, on his podcast, has said that he's going to break 2,000 yards receiving next year with the Dolphins. Your thoughts, Brian?
Well, get DJ Moore a podcast and have him say the same thing, and then I'm really excited.
Oh, I like where your head's at.
Yeah,
boy.
Yeah.
Well, if DJ Moore hit 2,000 yards receiving for the Bears, he would, I think, immediately be in the top five of Bears' all-time leading receivers, right?
Says more about the Bears than anything else.
I'm being a little bit facetious there, but he'd be close, honestly, not
oh,
that
my
far
good
off.
Lord.
He'd probably be in the top 20 with a 2,000-yard season.
Oh,
man,
I'm sure. Yeah.
I know I heard Sylvie the other day talking about betting the over for DJ Moore on receiving yards going over 800, and man, like, it seems like that's a no-brainer, right? As long as DJ Moore stays healthy, you would think he should hit 1,000 yards. I'm sorry, Justin.
But here, odds makers don't just throw a dart and come up with a number.
No,
right?
No, absolutely. I think the key is, you know, whenever you're betting an over or an under here, you have to be worried about the guy staying healthy, right? That's always a factor.
Well, but 800 seems too good to be true. Of course he's going to go over 800. You know, let me lock that bet in now. It just seems if I was going to make that bet, I'd probably go the other way, but I'm not, because I want him to exceed 800 by hundreds of yards. But that just seems too low. And when it seems too low, it's probably about right.
No, there's no doubt about it. So, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll see what actually if he doesn't hit 800 yards, we've got a problem. And Bears season has been a disaster. All right. That does it for us, folks. Meller and Hanley with you every Sunday from 9 to 11 up at 12 o'clock. White Sox pregame coverage. Chicago White Sox against the Atlanta Braves. First pitch coming your way at 12:30. Cease versus Kobe Allard. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later on ESPN 1000.